This is certainly the remotest landscape I have ever been recording in. I'm about 78 degrees south on this deep black tongue of lava and pumice surrounded by ice and snow. This is Cape Evans on Ross Island in the Antarctic, and I'm just surrounded by the most remarkable, stunning and daunting views I have ever seen. Under this beautiful bright blue sky with a piercing sun, it's 4 p.m. the sun's not going to set. It's not going to set for another 2 or 3 months. Bright, burning rays and blistering white reflections off a sea of ice I'm looking out in front of now. McMurdo Sound, most of it frozen solid to 2 or 3 meters, but a small silvery streak on the horizon many, many kilometers away, where the icebreaker Odin broke up the channel a few days ago. And far beyond, 60, 70, maybe 100 kilometers away. It's hard to tell in this completely pollution-free, crystal clear air. The immense mountain range of the Trans-Antarctic Mountains of continental Antarctica. West of that, just a few kilometres from here, the Barne Glacier. These huge walls of ice, 100, maybe 200 metres tall, just stop vertical and straight on the beaches. And just north of that, it's just amazing looking around, just north of that is Mount Erebus, 4,000 metre high mountain with a volcanic peak. Which even today is these white, wispy plumes of heat and steam escaping from the lava lake. And across to the east and maybe north, this massive, looming monolith, an island at the moment in a sea of ice and icebergs, inaccessible island. And then just a few meters above this high point, plain, weather-beaten cross which commemorates the three men from Shackleton's ill-fated Trans-Antarctic expedition who died at this side waiting for Shackleton to cross after having laid out fuel and food depots, not knowing that he was never going to get here. And then 100 metres below on the beach, another bleached wooden hut, that built by Captain Scott in 1911 for himself and his 23 other men who stayed here a couple of winters before he made his attempt to return from the South Pole, having reached it just a short time after Amundsen and died on the return journey. And then the quietness. Really difficult place to record. There's some Antarctic skuas on a small freshwater pool of melted snow down the slope, which I occasionally hear, but up here there is nothing else. Maybe a 2 or 3 kilometer breeze just carrying over this slope, but apart from that, this is probably as quiet as it gets on this planet. Down on the ice, it's very different. I was there this morning, just walking, walking across the sea, or walking across the sea ice, to reach a group of Weddell seals that were hauled out. But the sea ice is starting to break. It's January the 10th today, 2010. And sea ice is lifting away from the Barnes Glacier and also from the beaches here. And so you can walk across these quite large flows that they rub and scrape together and make these creaking, groaning and bubbling sounds, which I've recorded underwater with hydrophones underneath the ice shelf. Sounds just caught on this very gentle breeze, this low drumming and creaking and bubbling, sea ice grinding on the pumice and the harder glacial ice and other smaller icebergs. Thing I'm just starting to pick up here is I can see these black shapes across the sea ice waddling towards the land, and these are penguins, Adélie penguins, which are on the way back to their colony at Cape Royds, which is 6 or 7 miles across the Bar Glacier and another patch of frozen sea where I went a couple of days ago to record this colony of maybe 2,000 or 3,000 penguins that have still got chicks. And amidst this Antarctic quietness, it's really startling to come across sounds and behaviour and activity as loud as this. It does conjure up all sorts of emotions standing alone in this totally isolated landscape. And my colleagues are a kilometre or so down, based at a camp, a New Zealand Antarctic camp. People are here to restore Scott's hut, Terra Nova, here on Cape Evans. But it's easy to escape people here. Just come over a kilometre or so over one of these brows of lava and stare out into this wilderness and the distant continent beyond. Huge clouds carrying over some of the distant peaks. And remarkable to think that people would look out from here south 100 years ago and then step out with sleds onto what remained of the sea ice and pull 1,000 pounds of equipment and provisions into those mountains with the aim of walking something like 1,000 kilometres through some mountain passes up onto the ice plateau to try and find the South Pole in temperatures of -20, -30 degrees centigrade for days and weeks. And the interesting thing is, unlike, I guess, virtually every other place on this planet, the soundscape here will have remained the same. Antarctica is a place of extremes. It's the coldest, driest, and highest continent on the planet. But now, at the moment, I'm stood just 2 meters above sea level, as I'm actually stood on top of a frozen sea, the Ross Sea. And bizarrely, we've just landed here in a helicopter on sea ice about 10 kilometers offshore from Ross Island, and the sea ice partly has been broken up by an icebreaker coming in to resupply the base at McMurdo, and we've flown out here so I can record in some of the pools created by the icebreaker. So I'm stood on the surface of a frozen sea with about 2 meters of sea ice below me, and then the open ocean. And the pilot's just said, his charts say, we're standing on top of around about 300 meters depth of seawater, and there's a whale just about to surface. Surfaced to breathe about 3 meters away from me off this ice edge. Here it comes. Astonishing. I've also got a pair of hydrophones which I can just dip in on the edge of this sea ice and lower down off this ice shelf and just have a listen, because I know there are orcas, killer whales, in this channel as well. When you drop them in, particularly into these unknown depths such as this, and just tune in and listen. I need a break. I've almost walked to the South Pole, but not in true heroic style like Amundsen or Scott. I landed here at the South Pole base, the US base, here this morning, in a Hercules C-130 transport plane. After an amazing flight over the Trans-Antarctic Mountains and the famous Beardmore Glacier. And we've been at the base, checked in, put on my extra cold weather gear as advised, because looking at the temperature readouts in the canteen inside, it's at the moment -37.5 degrees centigrade out here. Beautiful bright blue day with a very slight breeze, but as soon as that breeze catches your skin, it burns it, and so it's about the most wrapped up I've ever been. And conveniently, of course, the South Pole is just a few hundred meters out from the main door of the base, and it's about 50 or 60 meters in front of me now, so I'll take the last few snaps. So this is it. The most remotest place on Earth, the South Pole. It may be the remotest, it's certainly not the quietest, because there's a large, significant US base here with all the infrastructure that requires, motorized vehicles. There's an airstrip, there's a lot of people working on the roof today. But beyond, there's this flat landscape of ice and snow going to this far distant horizon where the ice and snow meets this pale blue line of sky. I think, as I can sort of scan through 180 degrees, I like to imagine I can actually see the curvature of the Earth, but I don't know, maybe that's just distortion through these high-strength UV goggles, because it's piercingly bright. And then in front of me, the ceremonial South Pole, because of course, why have one pole when you can have two? And there's a ceremonial South Pole, which is this silver ball, on top of this meter-high red and white diagonally striped pole, and a semicircle of international flags. 12 nations are represented there, and it's sited right in front of the building, the United States Antarctic Program South Polar Base. And then just off a couple of hundred meters to the side is the geographical South Pole, I suppose a historically significant one. And at the moment that's interesting me rather more, because it's rather more isolated, and I can see a white sign and some other sort of brass marker and a flag of the United States, so I'll have a wander over there. Wow, no wonder it's tough walking around here. This is the geographic South Pole, elevation 9,301 feet. Although, as it's been explained to me, because we're also on top of a mountain of ice, the actual altitude is, in terms of the oxygenated air, is about 14,000 feet, so even walking a few hundred metres with recording equipment on the level through snow and ice is quite tough. I cannot imagine what it would be like for people 100 years ago hauling sleds. The only thing apart from a sign and a brass measuring device is this American flag hanging here, which does sound pretty good in this breeze. And there's a simple wooden sign in front of me here, planted in the ice. The geographic South Pole. And to the left, the name Roald Amundsen, December the 14th, 1911. And a quotation which must be from his diary. "So we arrived and were able to plant our flag at the geographical South Pole." Typically stoical statement from the Norwegian. And then, opposite to the right, the name Robert F. Scott, January the 17th, 1912. "The pole, yes, but under very different circumstances from those expected." But still, this is it, the South Pole. And if I spin round 360 degrees and look to that far distant horizon where the haze and the ice and the snow blur into this vanishingly pale blue sky. Every direction I look in from here, I'm looking north. Well, I've moved away as far as I safely can from any of the construction work and the vehicles and the flapping flags to try and get an atmosphere of what the sound is really like here at the South Pole today, Friday the 15th of January 2010, 16:39 hours local time. Recording. I've been down here in the Antarctic about 4 weeks now, and I realise that the airborne soundscape, when I'm away from some of the penguin colonies at least, is characterised by this really deep sense of quiet. But I realise now it's the sea ice that's really captured my imagination, both within it and below the surface. And the sounds I've recorded underneath with my hydrophones really do defy description. And I know what animals are making these sounds. So I think to conclude this piece, the best thing I can do is just to introduce the animals and let them speak for themselves. And this first track is an underwater or under ice recording of Weddell seals, which had gathered underneath these huge pressure ridges of sea ice, a sort of crumple zone near the coast where the wave action and the tidal action pushes huge slabs of ice up into the air like random concrete structures, and the seals gather on the edges, hauled out, but also vocalise under the water. And finally, these are my favourite animals, one of the world's top predators, and probably the most intelligent animal on the planet. Orcas, killer whales, hunting Weddell seals and penguins down these narrow sea ice channels that have opened up, which they cruise up and down, hunting using echolocation and communicating within their social groups with these highly complex vocalizations.